This is October 19th, and this is the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. Welcome to the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. I hope you guys are having a great day, a great week, enjoying hockey being back. Not really the Bruins. The Bruins have played one game to this point. The Bruins played one game in a week, and they don't play till Wednesday, but hopefully you enjoyed the game Saturday night and have been enjoying all the hockey around the league. A lot of just having hockey back. This time of the year is always so fun because it's so fresh. I'm watching every game. I'm consuming every possible piece of hockey content I can consume. So I hope you guys are doing the same, enjoying the Red Sox as well. On this episode, Connor and I discussed Jake DeBrusk in the third line, which looks to be back. I know it's one game, one of 82, but that line, pretty encouraging, pretty encouraging. If you guys get my reference there. Then we talked Swayman. We discussed sort of the Bruins scheduling things, what to look forward to coming up. And then we discussed ESPN and Turner, how we like the new broadcasts, how we like their new setups and the promotion of it. So we get into all of that in this episode and more. And without further ado, here's my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing well. I'm interested to hear how you are. You've deflected that right to me.
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm going to be over at Fenway today. It's the most exciting time of the sports year. We got Red Sox going on. Makes for very busy a couple of days, but I am doing well.
Yeah, it's a very busy time of the year, especially for someone like you, who you're not, I mean, Bruins have started, but they don't play until Wednesday.
Yes, so, we've benefited from the schedule being out of whack a little bit, so.
Yes, and now they're, oh, you know, you're around a little bit. You want to go over and see game three of the ALCS? Like, who would want to do that?
Yeah,
who would ever want to do that? But anyways, the Bruins have played one game, so, and it's funny. I was planning out the schedule for a few weeks for myself and kind of like the editing and recording the video podcast. And I'm like, well, there's a few times we're going to have to say, you know, at the start of the podcast, oh, this game hasn't happened yet. It's happening tonight. None of that now. Schedule is whack. They don't play again until Wednesday. So when you hear this on Tuesday or Wednesday, this is completely fresh. I think it's fresh even afterwards. But so we're going off one game. We're going to go off one single game, and that was a 3-1 win over the Stars on Saturday night. Very exciting stuff for Bruins fans and for the Bruins. And we'll start here. Jake DeBrusk, fully back. Jake DeBrusk had a goal, and he's on an 82-game goal pace. I'm telling you, this is the year for guys. This is the year that all
you finally validated for your prediction last year.
That number one. And also, this is the year, it seems, that all these wingers that Don Sweeney brought up are just killing it. You know, you have Ryan Donato scoring the first goal in Kraken history. You have Danton Heinen on
might be on an 82 goal pace. Like,
yeah, Danton Heinen actually might score 82 goals this year. That's not even like crazy. That actually could happen. And then you have Jake DeBrusk. But we'll focus on Jake DeBrusk and this third line with Nick Foligno and Eric Halla. Nick Foligno, fan of candy corn, which is gross, by the way. Disgusting.
He saved himself, let's clarify, by also saying that Peeps suck, which is good. Like, if he doubled down on both candy corn and Peeps, we might have some issues. Like, there, you might have to talk to him. Like, you okay, man? Like, is everything all right? But he saved himself a little bit there. That being said, candy corn, trash. Big trash.
Trash. Oh, trash. It's so funny, growing up, you know, with Peeps, I mean, back when I was like younger, you know, there wasn't Twitter and we didn't talk about Peeps at like the lunch table. And I would just kind of eat them because my parents liked them and they were all over CVS's and supermarkets when it was that time of year. So I just figured everybody liked Peeps. Maybe I was weird, didn't like Peeps. Maybe I'm just kind of an odd duck. I don't want to tell anyone that I don't like Peeps. Everybody does. I don't want to be the one kid to not fit in. And lo and behold, I was so everyone happy to hate, see no. everyone freaking hates Peeps.
Yes, no one gets excited about that. I mean,
just crystallized sugar all over marshmallows. But anyways, we're taking forever to get to this third line. But this third line, Jake DeBrusk, Nick Foligno, Eric Halla, tremendous on the forecheck. Great doing what they were supposed to do. What did you notice out of them Saturday?
Yeah, I think especially looking at DeBrusk's game, we talked about it, you know, it's not like he has to drastically change his game to get back to the production that I think Bruins fans are used to seeing from him. It's all about getting back to basics. And DeBrusk, as much as, you know, he scored a lot of goals in his young career, his highlight reel really isn't, you know, like he's going to be like picking the corners or he's going to be, you know, dangling through guys. A lot of them are, you know, tips, rebounds, you know, stuffing pucks in down low. Like, that's kind of the bread and butter of his game. And he's gotten back to that both during the preseason, which was very encouraging. And then you look at, you know, game one against Dallas. It's, you know, not like a flashy play. He kind of sweeps the puck past Hopi off of a, you know, Foligno bringing the puck down low. So, I think for DeBrusk, it's very encouraging to just see him get back to basics, not do anything too drastic and kind of let, you know, the go towards where the play is, right? Like put himself in great AIs, put himself on the doorstep and the chances are going to be there. And, especially against a team like Dallas, one thing you kind of notice in that game is much as the Bruins held pretty convincing leads on, you know, shot share, shots on goal, obviously, not a lot of like quality looks. So he looked like the shot map in the first two periods. It was almost like a big C. It was all around the offensive blue line, not a lot inside against Holpe. And DeBrusk is one of the few guys that kind of simplified and brought it to the net. I think there was in the first period as well, he had a drive to the net. He had a drive to the net where I think he crashed into the net in the second period. So, pulling a playbook out of Thomas Nosek, what he usually does is smashing to the net. But those are the kind of plays I think if you're looking at DeBrusk and how he wants to get back to his game, those are the encouraging shifts you see. It's good to see him get rewarded, but those other shifts where he's driving, you know, he draws a penalty on Suter, you know, moving his feet, being engaged, which I think is the biggest thing. It's one thing of last year, just, you know, puck wasn't finding him or, you know, he had chances, just weren't burying them. There were so many times last year where you were like, is DeBrusk all right? Like he's like either floating outside of the grade A ice, just doesn't seem engaged. Again, just one game, but moving his feet, getting down low, all those little things that if you do over an 82 game span is going to lead you to 15, 20, 25 goals.
Yeah. And again, he's on pace for 82 goals. So I don't know what you're talking about.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but
yeah, geez. No, but I mean, it's funny. Like, you know, on that goal he scored, that was a good play for him as the F1, you know, yeah, going in and immediately, you know, forechecking the defender. And that was important. And, you know, Halla supported and it was well done. And it hits at my bigger point, which is it's almost like how the third line goes, so too do the Bruins, in the sense that that's a really important line. If that line is scoring goals, if that line is doing what it did Saturday night, you have a whole different Bruins team. You have a team that has depth, which is something this team's been lacking forever. And again, it's so hard to go off one game, but it's the schedule. It's the schedule. We can't do anything
not
about
much
it.
We can do.
We're talking about one game here. But I mean, as you hit it on the nail, you hit the nail on the head. If you have that effort for 82 games or anything close to that, you're going to see production and you're going to see a much better Bruins team because this third line can be used in multiple situations. And at any time in the game, whereas last year, that third line was almost useless. I mean, that third line did nothing last year. So that's already looking, really, really good. And then obviously Foligno as well seems to be fitting in really nicely. I don't know, the Charlie McAvoy, after Charlie McAvoy came in and everyone's congratulating him, he goes and hugs Foligno immediately and they dive on the ground. I forgot that the McAvoy thing happened. I mean, we're so focused on the game. The McAvoy contract happened as well. That happened. $9.5 million a year. I don't think either of us disliked it. I think we both liked it. I think it's a good deal. I think we're kind of in agreement on it. I don't think anyone's...
Yeah, I think it's a win-win for everyone. I mean, just like quick take on it. I think McAvoy is happy because he got paid within what the market value is right now. I think after the contract kicks in, he's the fourth highest paid. He's tied with Seth Jones, and I think it's only Werenski.
Seth Jones!
Yeah, I'm totally Christ. That team's a mess. But yeah, Werenski, Doughty, Doughty and Carlson, and the guys paid ahead of him. So he's getting paid market value, deservedly. And I think for the Bruins, it's a win-win because I think that contract's going to look better and better as not just this year goes on, but in future years, especially when the cap ceiling raises up. And for the Bruins, especially, signing him before this year started was going to be huge, because if we think he's going to produce a, like we expect, where he's going to get a lot of power play minutes and, you know, he ends the year, let's say he was unsigned and went into this year and put up 53 points, was as good as he usually is at 5-on-5, we'd be like, oh, he's getting 11.5 or something like that. So I think a win-win for all parties. Everyone should be happy, and the Bruins have their franchise defenseman through his age 31 season, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, you get this guy in his prime, and he'll be in his prime still at the end of this deal. And you get him at a time when the cap is on the verge of going up but has not gone up yet. Like, again, if the cap was up at, like, $90 million right now, he'd be getting, like, 11 or 12 potentially. And I think in the next coming years, you're going to see these defensemen guys like Adam Fox. Like, the Rangers are up next to give Adam Fox that big payday. Lucky them. But, again, to anyone who's saying this is an overpay, it isn't, because he's worth that money now.
He's already worth it right now, yes, exactly.
And then think about how good he's going to be in 3 years and how that money's going to look against a much bigger salary cap. So I think this is a win-win. It was a smart move. Good for McAvoy, too, securing the bag. Like, that is kind of number one for players. He did it, got it. And I think the new trend around the league is sign guys when they're 23, 24, not when they're 30, 31, as we saw with Torrey Krug. It's all about making bets. It's kind of about making bets on players. And there's only one place that I bet, and that's BetOnline. But they're back, and they're better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and NHL season, and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head on over to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use that promo code CLNS50 to receive that bonus from basketball, football, baseball postseason. You want to bet on the Red Sox? You do it here. NHL, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Again, promo code CLNS50. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, so we can do a quick thing on Jeremy Swayman, who looked very good. Wasn't tested really at all in that first period. I think he had, what, 2 or 3 shots in the first?
I think it was two.
Yeah, it was 2 shots in the first period, but ended with 28 shots on him, stopped 27. The one goal that he let in was just a complete defensive breakdown. I mean, it was a point-blank wrist shot from, like, right in front of him. I mean, there's not much you can do there. Thomas would have had it. Thomas would have had that. But looked good. The kid is poised as hell. You tweeted it. He was taking selfies before the game. I'm amazed at how this kid has no nerves. Like, none. He just goes out there and plays. And he was like that at Maine, too. And again, it keeps hitting at the point of, you know, obviously him and Olmarco shared the net a bit. But I don't see Swayman slumping. I don't see it. And we've said this all offseason. Swayman doesn't strike me as a guy who's streaky. You know, he seems very consistent and pretty much good all the time. By the way, I have a Kraken sweatshirt on, if you can kind of see.
There you go.
I am wearing a Kraken sweatshirt. It was kind of popping up under the mic. But to me, with a guy like Swayman, I don't, and this is probably a conversation we're going to have later in the year about the, you know, was it worth it to go out and get Olmar? Could you have went out and got somebody cheaper? But for now, I mean, it looks like Swayman's keeping that net.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Umak fares when he gets his next reps. I imagine they're probably going to go back and forth to start the year. One, because the schedule is so wonky anyway. And two, because I think they want to ease, you know, Umak in, but also see what both those guys have. I think Cassidy already kind of mapped that out before, that they're not going to make any real big tweaks to the rotation until probably once they get out of October. So I imagine we see Umak on Wednesday against Philly. But, you know, as you said, the one thing I think that stands out about Swayman is, you know, along with the technical ability, how good he is moving laterally. Yeah, as you said, like, his poise is crazy. Like, that guy doesn't get fazed by anything. Like, and for as much as, you know, I think for a guy like him, there's obviously you need confidence. You know, they've said he's very humble, but there's that quiet confidence that a lot of those guys have. He also just, you know, seems like he kind of just rolls with it as well. As you said, like, guy is taking selfies before the game. I think, you know, I have people tweeting me that if they're, like, behind the net when he's playing, like, during, like, media timeouts, he's, like, interacting with people. Like, he's a guy who kind of just rolls with it. You know, he did a press conference after the game in the media room, and it's a little dead quiet. Like, when the player's done talking, there's that awkward, like, you know, guy gets up, everyone kind of settles around, and he, like, went to like go fist bump someone and was like, oh, guys, it's a win. Let's be happy. Like he was like a, I tweeted that he was like a college orientation leader at like 7 a.m. and like, it's like way too early. And they're all like, yeah, let's go guys. Come on. Like,
come on.
So that's I think kind of just how like, how he's wired, which I think if you're a pro athlete, it's a great thing to have. Cause so many of these young guys, understandably, you get to the big leagues and you're like, oh shit. Like, you know, what am I? Am I settled in? Like, what do I, am I doing something wrong? Like all those things. Yeah, he seems like he just rolls with it. And is composed. We'll see what happens. Like, it's going to be fascinating when, listen, it's inevitable. He's going to have a game where it's, you know, 4 goals on, you know, 24 shots or something like that. There's going to be a game where he looks mortal in net and it's how he builds off of it. Right. And I think that's what's going to be the first challenge and the first insight as to how he kind of handles the ups and the downs that come with it. Cause every goalie, every player has ups and downs. It's how you kind of build off of it and how you compartmentalize it and all those things. And from what we've seen so far, it doesn't seem like any of that phases him, but we'll see what happens when they get into the actual day-to-day grind that comes with an NHL season. But so far, so good.
I keep going back to his time at Maine where he just got peppered with shots every game. There was never a game where he didn't have like 50 shots on him. And I just find it fascinating the way he's able to, you know, carry on with fans. And, you know, after the game, I was reading that he was saying like, oh, you know, I treated it like a normal game, but now looking back, that was kind of a big game starting opening night. It's like, no, really? Yeah. You think that was a big game? But he has that demeanor. And it's funny that all these Bruins goalies who come through have these like odd demeanors. Rask was kind of careless, not in a good way. I mean that in a good way. Don't take that out of context.
Clip that video.
Yeah. Rask was careless. But he was,
I think it was Finnish aloofness is very candid.
You'd ask him about goals and he'd be like, well, I don't know. Yeah, the best was, you might remember this, in the locker room after game 7 of that, the cup loss. I think, if I remember right, a reporter asked him something along the lines of like, but the reporter was like, you know, what's the mood in the dressing room or something like that? And Rask's like, what the fuck? Like, what do you think? Yeah. If I remember right, I would give the same response, but yes, Jeremy Swayman, poised, you know, doesn't have nerves of steel, so to speak, in net. And, you know, when we're talking about being chill, if you want to be chill like Jeremy Swayman, let's talk cannabis. Let's talk cannabis. Because if you want to be chill like this, why not? And we're going to talk about cannabis, specifically Massachusetts premier cannabis dispensaries, INSA, INSA. They're the premier because the founders, Pat and Pete, re-engineered the cannabis model from what they sell to how they sell it, while never forgetting it's for everyone. INSA dispensaries are inviting and modern, so come in if just to learn more. It's a good time no matter what you're looking to do. The staff are authorities on the science who answer every single question from differences between flowers and concentrates to offerings for insomnia and anxiety, or a Rico for just hanging out with friends. They're the new bars, so just go and hang out. INSA has a world-class head chef too, and only hires the most respected growers who perfected their craft when it wasn't so legit. So they were kind of like trendsetters in a sense. You know, they're doing it before everybody else does it. One last thing. The INSA founders aren't VCs from Silicon Valley, but lifelong pals from Springfield, Mass. From beautiful Springfield, Mass. If that ain't a reason to support them, I don't know what is. So guess what? There's another local team to root for. You got the Red Sox, you got the Bruins, you got the Celtics, Patriots, you have the Pride, you have the Revs, and you have INSA. So INSA's the 7th or 8th team on that list. In Salem, East Hampton, Boston, and 2 Springfield locations, you can go visit INSA. Just one of the Springfield locations is just off I-91 beside the MGM Casino. Mention we said to stop by, and you get a sweet t-shirt for a penny. Hand over a penny, say that Evan and Connor or Bruins Beat sent you to INSA, and you will get a free t-shirt. Or call 877-500-INSA, again, 877-500-INSA, or you can visit them online at penny.insa.com to get your penny t-shirt. Okay, so we've talked to Brusk, we've talked to Swayman. I want to get into a little bit of the new broadcast, because again, we've mentioned it's only been one game for the Bruins, but there's been multiple national broadcasts. Obviously, ESPN and Turner now have the rights instead of NBC. We saw ESPN on Tuesday night of last week, which was like the opening night. It was what? It was Lightning and Rangers.
The Lightning and Penguins was that
Penguins.
First game.
I'm thinking of Turner. Lightning
and then it was Kraken in Vegas.
Kraken in Vegas, which was a way better game.
Yes. Like, not even close. That Lightning game was bad. That was a bad
horrible
game.
Horrible fan. Like, it was the whole thing. And then the next night, Turner was
Rangers Caps
and
Avs Blackhawks.
That was the first time we saw the Blackhawks just debacle. But I was watching the new broadcast. I wanted to see, what do I like? What do I not like? And my overall thoughts from both is I like both. I enjoy that it's on ESPN. I like that it's on Turner. We'll start with ESPN. It felt so professional. Well, they did it really well. Kevin Weeks is awesome during the intermission. Linda Cohn and Kevin Weeks are great together during the intermission. I like Buchigross a lot. So I just enjoyed the broadcast. Did you have any thoughts from the ESPN one?
Yeah, no, I thought, as you said, professional, informative, good personality, as you said. I think Emily Kaplan was awesome during the broadcast.
Ooh, yes.
Instead of literally, we didn't have to listen to where a guy went for the USHL. We actually got actual insight. We like heard what people were saying on the bench, like actual pertinent information to an actual game, which was very refreshing. I think both broadcasts are very, very good. ESPN, as much as I think people, we'll see what happens when they get into more of the ESPN Plus broadcast, because I feel like that's just going to really confuse people at first. So
yes.
I think you have to navigate that hurdle, because as much as I think ESPN is being very upfront of like, don't forget, like, this is what you have to do. I know when like we get to like Bruins games, especially, I'm going to have people tweeting at me or having, you know, questions about it, which is understandable. Like, it's definitely something in terms of pitching. Like, no, you need to get, no, it's not ESPN. You have to subscribe to get this broadcast as well. Like, that'll be a little bit of a hurdle, but you look at ESPN and the access and the resources they have, it's only good for the sport to have, you know, them making the circuits on a network of that size.
Yeah. And I loved during the ESPN broadcast on Tuesday, having Stephen A. Promote the Wild Ducks game on Friday night. I was like, whoa, what year have I woken up in that Stephen A is like, remember to watch the Wild and the Ducks after my show's
over. Trevor Zegras.
Yeah, Trevor Zegras. I was like, what? That was kind of out of left field. But yeah, I mean, I have ESPN Plus, and I know you do too. And I actually like it because I watch, because the games are there. They have, even when they're not technically broadcasting the games. Do they have something with NHL TV? Or something where they broadcast all the games?
Because they more or less have absorbed, I think, like their rights where it's, you get the same amount of access. Like, I don't know how exactly it works, but it's more or less they've kind of absorbed like the overall broadcast span or, you know, sphere of what they can show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And then Turner, I loved. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, you work for Turner. Of course you're going to love it. Well, if it sucked, I just wouldn't say anything. That's the difference.
That's true. You wouldn't say anything. Turner, you know, was just there.
I didn't see it. Sorry, guys. I wasn't watching. I was doing something else. No, I loved it. I thought that was great. They nailed the pregame show. I almost wanted to rather watch the pregame show and the intermission than the actual game. It was fun. Very Gretzky heavy, which I feel like as time wears on, it'll wear off a bit. But it was good. They had good chemistry. I thought Anson Carter was great. Because with NBC, he was very official and polished, and he was a totally different guy on the desk on Wednesday. It was awesome. And then, you know, Rick Tockett, you know, I think he'll start to talk a little bit more, no pun intended. And then, you know, Biz is great with next to Gretzky. I thought it was great. I did. Yeah. I thought it was good. Charles Barkley coming in.
Yeah.
So that was good. Did you have any thoughts from it?
Yeah, no, I think that was definitely a breath of fresh air. And I think there was maybe not skepticism, but there was definitely concern of like, all right, how's this going to work out? Because I feel like Turner was going to do something similar. Like, they had the right ingredients for why, like, Inside the NBA, for example, works so well, of like these guys kind of riffing on each other. And, you know, how that was going to translate to hockey was going to be interesting. And, you know, all right, Gretzky is Gretzky, but how is he going to be on camera? Like, all these questions. But I thought, like, he did pretty well. As you said, very Gretzky heavy, but also he wasn't, like, even kind of feeding into it. He's like, okay, yeah, I'm good. Like, stop. But I think, no, like, the way it was set up, I think having, like, Bissonnette next to Gretzky in terms of, like, you know, egging him on or getting him to, like, to engage more. Like, and it's something Bruce Cassidy talked about when asked, I think Ty Anderson asked him about his thoughts on it, that not everyone, especially, you know, beat ESPN or Turner, you're going to get a whole bunch of new fans interested of like, all right, I know what hockey is, but like, haven't watched a broadcast. Like, not everything has to be, you know, the pregame show of breaking down a forecheck or what have you. Sometimes it's all about just having like the personalities come out and these guys kind of riffing on one another and talking about old stories and, you know, adding analysis, but not stuff that like, you know, casual fans are going to shut their brains off. I'm like, all right, I guess I'll just flip back when the game starts. Like, yeah. I think as a whole, they hit that good balance between like ESPN being very informative and Turner being a little bit lighthearted. And I imagine they both kind of will find that median as they work their way through it. But I think nothing but good things in terms of, yeah, pregame show coverage. I think the broadcasts are pretty clean. I really like Turner's, you know, broadcast presentation, how it's all set up. They have like the clock on the ice for the power play, like little things like that, that I think are really, really good. So far so good. I think it's good for the league that they're going to have it on these two networks. And I'm sure, for all the people involved on both networks, they're just going to get better and better as the year goes on.
And another thing, you mentioned this, I didn't realize Ty asked that. Ty made a point to me, I don't remember if it was a year ago or whenever it was. We were walking through the press box and he said, you know, Bruce Cassidy, when he's done coaching, would make an amazing yes. national analyst, would make a yes. tremendous fit. And I said, damn it, that is so true. Like, it's tough to tweet out like, oh yeah, Bruce Cassidy would make a great analyst, because yes. that's like a backhanded compliment to some people. But it is true. Cassidy would be a spectacular national guy. And that's not a guy who like is, it's not like, I don't think outside of the market it's well known. Like, I don't know if that's like a widely talked about thing. Like, oh, Bruce Cassidy's a, you know, you never know what you're going to get from Cassidy. He's not like Torts or anything like that. He's not like widely known as like this, but he's so good. He's so personable and he's so talkative and he loves the media side of it. Like, Bruce yeah. Cassidy genuinely loves talking to him. I think loves talking to the media most times. So he would be a guy, you know, years down the road, because I don't think he's done anytime soon, that's for sure. But years down the road would be a really good analyst. So that's kind of the first game plus first broadcast thoughts. Hopefully you guys enjoyed us, our TV talk, our ESPN and Turner beat. That's what it is now, ESPN and yes. Turner beat. Anyways, what can the people look forward to over at BSJ?
Yeah, as we wait for the next game to finally arrive on Wednesday, we have, you know, we're breaking down the first kind of game footage we've seen, what we like, what we didn't like out of that first game. We're going to have a few features in the pipeline. If you're following over at BSJ, I also have some Red Sox stuff this week as well. So kind of a little bit of everything over at BSJ, as is the case every single day. We have great coverage across all the major teams in Boston. So subscribe over at bostonsportschannel.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. Highly recommend. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky for Bruins Beat. I will see you guys later.